One senator who will not be debating whether to authorize the use of force against ISIS is one who lost one of the hardest fought and most expensive Senate races in history last November. Kay Hagan, Democrat of North Carolina, who lost to Republican Tom Tillis. Hagan is now a resident fellow at Harvard's Institute of Politics, and she joins us now. Senator Hagan, welcome.
Thank you, Jeremy. My pleasure.
Well, I want to start with just looking back on your race. You had the largest field operation ever in a North Carolina Senate race. You had the support of the National Democratic Party and donors. What do you think went wrong?
I think there are several things. First of all, I think the money in politics after Citizens United is a situation where we as a nation have got to solve this problem. I think once you really look at the fact that corporations can give unlimited money to politicians, I think that's not democracy. I think when you see what David and Charles Koch were able to do and how they've announced they're going to do $900 million going forward in the next two-year cycle, most people in the United States do not have $900 million to spend. So I think that when we look at this, their right of First Amendment freedom of speech mutes 350 million other Americans because they don't have that kind of access to TV, radio, media because of money.
So you think it was money that caused you to lose?
I think one of the issues is money, and I think that's something that we're going to have to grapple with going forward. I think from my perspective and the Democrats nationally, and I've said this before, that I don't think the president used the bully pulpit to take hold of the economy. Gas prices were $2.40 a gallon. The stock market was at an all-time high. Unemployment had come down considerably in the last 6 years. Wages were stagnant, but the Democrats were the ones who said, we are pushing for an increase in the minimum wage. We've got to attack this problem. We've got to be sure that small businesses can have access to capital. But I don't think that message resonated over and over and over again in the state and other states around the country, especially in the South. And we didn't take hold of that and run with it.
But did you want President Obama playing a bigger role in your race, campaigning with you?
That's not what I said. I said what we should have done is really taken hold of the economy and said, look at the policies and look where we were back in 2009 when this country was hemorrhaging 700,000 jobs a month in January versus where we are today. And I think what happened as soon as the election was over, Mitch McConnell got on the Senate floor and said, look at the economy. It's due to the Republicans. And that's not right.
Now, you obviously benefited from high turnout with President Obama when you won the first time around in North Carolina. And his unpopularity probably played a role in you not winning the second time around. How much does an individual Senate race rely on the president on the ticket when you're running, as you were the first time anyway, in a presidential election year?
In a presidential election, your turnout's higher. In my race, though, in 2008, I do need to point out that the president carried North Carolina by 14,000 votes. I carried my race in 2008 by 360,000 votes. So it's many times people say I came in on the coattails of the president, but there's a big difference between 360,000 and 14,000.
How much time as a senator do you have to spend raising money for the next election?
I think that's one of the issues that we need to be looking at as a country. I mean, obviously, I was in Washington for 4 or 5 days out of the week, and then you have to run. So it is it's a time management issue. I think any given day is different, but I will say it's too much time raising money.
Okay, I want to ask you, Senator Hagan, about what's happening in Washington now. And we're facing now another fight over whether to raise the debt ceiling. The U.S. is going to reach its borrowing limit on Monday. In 2011, you supported raising the debt ceiling with no strings attached, as the president wanted. Do you think there should be a debt ceiling at this point?
if you once again historically you look back, the majority party is the one that has to garner the votes to be sure that that debt ceiling isn't breached. I think people don't understand. It's as if you've already spent the money on your visa bill, and at the end of the month you go, "Oh, I've decided I'm just not going to pay it." There are definitely consequences and repercussions to that. But I think, once again, you will see Speaker Boehner have to realize that his Tea Party conservatives will not support an increase in the debt ceiling, and he will have to triangulate and, once again, work with the Democrats in the House in order to push a bill through. And I think the same in the Senate in order to move that forward.
So should there be a debt ceiling, do you think, in general?
I think that in the past, it had been pretty rote, where it was not a big issue in the public sphere. And I think, one, we've got to have tax reform. We have not had tax reform in this country since 1986. And I think the polarization that we're seeing right now in Congress is, once again, not good at all for how we work together to get consensus on how we get the budgetary and the debt issues solved in this country. And I'm very disappointed that I am not back in the U.S. Senate to certainly push that and work on that. We need to be investing in infrastructure, and it would be an incredible infusion of jobs. But once again, all that comes into play together when you're talking about the debt ceiling.
So should I put you down as yes debt ceiling or no debt ceiling?
I think yes debt ceiling, but just to put it on top of the list that we need to be talking about, but I certainly don't think we could ever default in this country on our outstanding debt.
What about this fight that's going on today in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about whether to authorize the use of military force against ISIS? The president wants another authorization. Right now they're relying on one that was passed after the 9/11 attacks. Do you think he needs new authorization to fight ISIS?
When I was in the Senate last year, I said that we did need a new authorization for military force. You look back to the one that came in after 9/11. You know, that was 14 years ago.
Yeah.
We need to update, and we need to have the authority in an updated version of the AUMF and move forward on that.
What do you think about this letter that was sent from a number of Republicans in the Senate to Iran, saying basically that whatever President Obama does could be undone by the next president, trying to meddle into the negotiations with Iran over its nuclear program?
I think it was sophomoric. I think it has hurt our country and how we deal with other nations from a foreign policy perspective. And I think it's really a slap in the face to the United States.
Are you going to run again?
You know, I'm not saying yes and I'm not saying no.
Okay. Well, right now you're teaching students. And I wonder, what are you hearing from them? What kind of questions are they asking you that you think are indicative of where politics is going to go 20 years from now?
You know, it's interesting. Some of them obviously want to run for office. Some of them are more interested in the policy. Some of them are more interested in international affairs, looking at NGOs, non-government operations, on how we can look at other nations and help in different situations. But the questions that they bring forward to me are very impressive.
And now that you're teaching, what grade would you give to President Obama on his presidency overall at this point?
I think historically we're going to look back and see that he had an unbelievable amount of problems around the world. Obviously, when he first took office and the recession and then how we came out of that, I think that he will be graded in a very high level.
Is that an A or what do you think?
You know, I'm not going to say that, but I think, once again, historically, we're going to look back, and I think we as a nation ought to be incredibly proud of the fact that we have elected our first African-American president. I know a lot of people had their attention on Selma this past weekend. 2 years ago, I had the privilege to be a part of the group that walked over the Pettus Bridge, and to be in a historic place like that with Representative John Lewis, who at the age of 25 years old was beaten to a pulp because he wanted to point out that African-Americans needed the right to vote. And yet, look at what's happening across this country. country, especially in North Carolina. We have the most monstrous voting rights bill that came forward that is trying to deny people their right to vote. This is being litigated now, and I certainly hope it is found to be unconstitutional.
One more question, Senator Hagan, and that is, what do you miss most about being in the Senate?
You know, that's an interesting question. I served on the Armed Services Committee. I chaired the Emerging Threats and Capabilities Subcommittee. And the military is very important to me. I come from a very strong military family. My husband's a Vietnam vet, my dad, my brother. But I also miss being on the inner workings of what is going on around the world, especially from the Emerging Threats Subcommittee, and how I could impact that situation with my knowledge.
Kay Hagan, former Democratic senator from North Carolina, now a resident fellow at Harvard's Institute of Politics. Thank you so much, Senator.
Thank you, Jeremy.